Kerry man has been found guilty of the reckless endangerment of a young woman by driving over her head with a van. 26-year-old Cayman Sheedy of Rusheen Fireys was found guilty by a majority verdict of 11-1 at Tralee Court. The jury found he was reckless in driving a van over a young woman's head after he drove a group of young people back to his mother's house in Fireys in the summer of 2022. With me to talk about this with the details of it is Radio Kerry's Mark Lynch. And Mark, if you could start, I suppose, for just outlining, how did it happen that this happened, that Mr. Sheedy drove over a young woman's head?
Yeah, it's an extraordinary sentence to come out of anyone's mouth, Gerry, and I think that's what caught people's attention about this trial. So someone here has drove over a woman's head, and the obvious question, how does something like that happen? It's an extraordinary sequence of events as well that led to it, in that it was a totally chance encounter that this actually happened. We have these three young women from Cork, late teens, early 20s age, come to Clarny for a night out on the 18th of July 2022. They book an Airbnb on the Muckross Road, start getting ready there, have a bit to drink. It's a nice evening, so they walk into town, stop at a pub along the way, and none of them have been to Clarny for a night out before, so they were all from Cork, obviously, so they asked the bouncer where they should go for a night out. He suggested the Grand, so off they went, and then they stayed there for the rest of the night at the Grand. Now, I'm going to pause their story for just a second, because simultaneously, over in Fireys, you have three young men, Cayman Sheedy, the accused man, two of his friends, one Connor Quirk, and a man we only ever hear of as Garode. We don't even hear a last name for this man. He remains a fairly mysterious character throughout the trial, but I'll come back to that a little bit later. So they're drinking a few cans of cider, etc., at Cayman Sheedy's house. He lives with his mother in Fireys, and they decide to go into Clarny for the rest of the night. Cayman Sheedy is sober, so he drives them in his van, and it was dark when they went in, so in July you're probably talking about 10:30 or 11 p.m. onwards, and the Grand then is where this chance encounter happens that changes Cayman Sheedy and Molly Hegarty's lives forever. Mr. Sheedy meets one of Miss Hegarty's friends, and by default, I suppose, the rest of the two groups start mingling. And Molly Hegarty was saying she remembers wanting to go home at that point, but after the night out, all six of them went back or walked back to Cayman Sheedy's van, which is parked in Killarney. Now, the three women had been drinking since about 5 p.m. and this was almost 4 years ago, so each of their memories have a bit of a blur about them, but Cayman Sheedy is sober at the time, so he drives them all in his van. Now, two of the women actually gave evidence they believed they were getting a lift back to their Airbnb. One of Cayman Sheedy's friends told the court that he was driving them back to the house in Fireys because he thought he had a free house, i.e. his family weren't home. But even the layout of the van was a bit odd. You had Cayman Sheedy, the driver, and one of Molly's friends called Emer in the front, and then in the back was Molly herself, her friend Arlene, Cayman friend Connor, and again there's a bit of confusion as to whether this mysterious Garode character was in the front or back. So the van arrives back in Fireys. It becomes clear that Mr. Sheedy does not have a free house. His mother approaches the van, and the court heard she was fairly annoyed at him for bringing a group of random people back to the house at all hours. And while this is happening, someone opens the back door of the van. People start getting out. Arlene gets out first. She says she felt the van start to move as she got out, and then Molly Hegarty gets out, but when she realised they weren't at the Airbnb, she goes to get back into the van, and as she's facing the van, it reverses and knocks her down, and then the back wheel drives over her head. And as she's lying on the ground, she told the court she was seeing the front wheel approach her head as well, and then the van stopped and she thinks the danger is over. But the van then starts driving forward again, and the same back wheel drives over her head again, and she talked about feeling the physical pressure on her head from the wheel and then just blacking out until she woke up in the ambulance. Now again, there were a few different accounts of exactly the process there, and different people thought things happened at different times, but it was accepted that Cayman Sheedy drove the van over Molly Hegarty's head twice.
Okay, how does that relate to a charge of reckless endangerment?
Yeah, so it's an interesting legal point, I suppose, Gerry. As senior counsel for the defence, Seamus Roach, he was assisted by Barrister Katie O'Connell, instructed by Solicitor Emer Griffin from the office of Padraig O'Connell, and they argued that essentially this was a road traffic matter, but the state couldn't bring a charge like careless driving or dangerous driving because it happened on private property. So Mr. Roach actually said this was a gap in the legislation, and presenting this offence as reckless endangerment was akin to putting a square peg in a round hole or using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Essentially, he was saying the offence didn't fit the charge. So just to explain, reckless endangerment is not about the consequences, it's about whether he was responsible for creating a risk of serious harm or death. Marley Hegarty did receive very serious and lasting injuries from the incident, but that wasn't relevant to the charge. He could have brought the charge if there was no injuries at all. It's all about whether Cayman Sheedy was reckless, and the prosecution said, and defence, agreed on a definition of reckless for the jury to use. They had to ask themselves, did Mr. Sheedy consciously disregard an obvious risk with his actions? Because the charge of reckless endangerment says, a person shall be guilty of an offence who intentionally or recklessly purposely engages in conduct which creates a substantial risk of death or serious harm to another. So there's intentionally or recklessly. Now, no one is saying it was intentional. That was agreed from everyone that it was not intentional. But the prosecution said, yes, he was reckless. The defence said it was accidental. There was no obvious risk he ignored. So Kamenchidis decides to reverse the van. There's a partition between the front and the back, so he can't see into the back to see if people are sitting down or standing up or getting out. There's obviously no rear view mirror through the back, so there is a blind spot. And added to that, a motor vehicle inspector for the Gardaí said there's a light on the dash that shows up when a door is open, and he should have seen that light was on when the back door was open and shouldn't have reversed the van. Now, the defence argued even if he didn't see the light, that wasn't reckless, as people often don't see lights on the dash. So the jury had to decide, was there an obvious risk that he consciously disregarded, and did that create a substantial risk of death or serious harm to Molly Hegarty? And then you also have the second movement. So after he reverses and rolls over her head, he moves the van forward again. So the jury also had to look at this act and ask themselves the same question. He knows there's some commotion, people are shouting at him to stop the van, and he does stop the van. Was he reckless in moving the van forward again? And the jury ultimately decided that he was reckless in that scenario.
Okay, Kamenchidi also lied to Gardaí about some of the circumstances.
Correct, yeah, he did. And it's always difficult to get into the mind of a jury, Jerry, but it would appear this may have played on their minds when coming to this decision. And to be clear, the lies didn't matter in terms of whether he was guilty. He accepted he drove the van over her head to an extent. So the account I told you about Kamenchidi meeting one of Molly's friends in the Grand, that he was actually the reason the two groups came together, that's based off the accounts of everyone there except Kamenchidi. He said he dropped his friends to Clarny, but he didn't go into town with them. And he went back home and went cutting the grass. And then his two friends arrived back with a group of three women to Kamenchidi's house in Fieries without him knowing, and he said the reason he reversed the van was because his mother told him to, so that they could all have more space outside the front to enjoy the weather. Even in that scenario, you're talking 2 or 3 a.m, so that account was totally different to everyone else's. And then he said he only reversed over Molly Hegarty and then stopped the van and gave the keys to someone else. Again, everyone else saw him drive the van a second time, and everyone else told the court that Molly Hegarty certainly felt the wheel a second time. She gave a vivid account of that in court. So the lies were inconsequential, honestly, when it came to the risk and whether he was reckless, that question. But it's hard to see that not having some kind of effect on a jury, even subconsciously, when they're reaching a decision. That we had this mysterious Garaud character as well, I mentioned, and to this day the Gardaí only refer to him by his first name. They still don't know who he is. Kamenchidi told the Gardaí in his interview that Garaud didn't want him to share his details with the guards. And again, that doesn't actually matter when it comes to the actual charge and whether he's guilty. But did it play in the jury's mind that he wasn't 100% forthcoming or truthful about everything? It may well have, Jerry.
Okay, how long did the jury take to decide on this, Mark?
Yeah, so the jury was sent out at 11:09 on Friday, and it was a jury of 7 women and 5 men. They came back straight away and asked could they have a copy of the medical report outlining Miss Hegarty's injuries. The judge, Alec Gabbett, said no and just read it back to them again. So they came back again with a question at about 20 past 12 or so on Friday. They'd been out for around 1:10 at that stage, and they wanted to hear the judge again define recklessness for them. So the prosecution and defence had told them, you need to decide on this single aspect, was he reckless? And the jury already, after that hour, were focused in on that. So this wasn't a situation where they had to decide on 6 or 7 charges. It was one count and one decision to make, really. So they got their lunch on Friday, and at about 10 to 3 on Friday afternoon, the judge called them back and said they could reach a majority verdict of 10 to 2 or 11 to 1. And it took just 15 minutes after that for the jury to come down again with the verdict. And that verdict was guilty by a majority of 11 to 1.
Okay, how has this affected Molly Hegarty? What kind of injuries did she receive?
Yeah, she gave evidence herself in the trial. Came across a really bright and intelligent individual as well, and she outlined her own experience of the events. Really vivid, really shocking. Like I said before about her describing feeling the physical pressure on her head from the wheel, which is a thought I'm sure just makes most people very uncomfortable. So she said she woke up next in the ambulance and she was never more scared in her life. She was asking the paramedics if she was going to die, if she was going to be paralysed for life. She was even more scared because they couldn't give her an answer. At the time, she had lost all feeling in her entire body, nothing below the neck at all. So just to briefly go over the injuries she received: broken neck, broken back. She said there was a flap of her scalp torn from her skull and another bit missing altogether, so her scalp had to be stapled back together. She needed emergency surgery twice, once just after the incident to stabilise her spine, and then again a few days later because her spine collapsed, so she had to relearn how to walk, and is to this day living with the effects of it. She's living in constant pain, on medication for that, and has issues with her memory as well, and she actually hasn't regained the feeling in all parts of her body. So she had to move to Spain, which is where her mother lives, because she's medically unable to work and can't look after herself. So she said every single day since then is a struggle, but she seems a really remarkable young woman. She's separately taking a civil case, which is, this is revealed during the trial as well, against Kamenchidi for the injury she suffered, and that hasn't been heard yet.
Okay, what was Kamenchidi's demeanour during the trial, and what happens next, Mark?
Yeah, so for the entire trial, Cathal Sheedy just seemed to be staring straight ahead, and he didn't have a reaction to anything that was said during the trial, really. Straight after the verdict was delivered again, he seemed to have no reaction, but when the jury left, he was very emotional, and members of his family were very emotional as well. It was explained to him that the complainant, Molly Hegarty, had no objection to him being released on bail pending sentencing. Mr. Sheedy's senior counsel said this was a very generous gesture from Ms. Hegarty, and she is, as I said, living in Spain, so Mr. Sheedy's been remanded on bail to the 30th of April, when they'll set a date for sentencing, but it's likely the matter will be dealt with in June, when Molly Hegarty will get the chance to speak in full about the impact that this had on her, Gerry.
Okay. All right, Mark, listen, thanks for taking us through that case this morning. That's Mark Lynch there, who was covering that story of the case of Cathal Sheedy and Molly Hegarty, which came before court, and Cathal Sheedy found guilty of recklessly endangering her by driving over her, and that happened on Friday in Tralee Circuit Court. If you have a view for us on the programme, any comments for us this morning, get in touch with us on the show on 0667 123 666. You can text or WhatsApp us on 083 300 300. We want to hear from you. On the way, we're going to be talking about cases of suspected drink spiking and why there needs to be toxicology tests specifically for it in emergency departments.